50, or go to givetowbai.org online. Give to the number 2WBAI.org online. All right. It is now 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
Ο αριθμός που καλείτε δεν αντιστοιχεί σε συνδρομητή. Παρακαλούμε, ελέγξτε τον αριθμό που καλέσατε ή συμβουλευτείτε τις πληροφορίες καταλόγου. The number you are calling does not exist. Please check the number you have dialed or consult the directory inquiries.
We're sorry. The number you have reached, 99.5 WBAI, is now off the hook.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
You are.
I am what?
Joined by Kyle.
Oh, okay. Yes, I am. Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
I'm sorry, out in Skype land. Gila.
Hello.
And, of course, Alex.
It is I. Good evening.
Wow. You know, you'll have to bear with Kyle and myself tonight, because we went and we got vaccinated yesterday. in fact, I got vaccinated for three different things at the same time. I've never done that before. It was like the grand slam of vaccines. My arm didn't hurt last night, but today, boy, does it ever hurt. But it's worth it. You know, it's the kind of pain that, makes you somehow feel like you're tackling something important. Right, Kyle?
Yeah, and you just you have to remember that you're sore, because it can surprise you.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but yeah.
Well, if you lean on it or brush against something, it could be really painful.
Oh, absolutely,
painful.
Yes. At least the next day or so. So we might be a little terse. We might occasionally cry out in pain if we brush up against something. But let me just take this moment to encourage everybody listening. Please don't forget this year to get your vaccines against flu, against COVID. I also got a vaccine against shingles, because apparently that's bad. And I thought that was a nice thing to have, but it sounds comforting, but it's not. It's bad. I know people really suffer under things like that. And it's easy. It's easy. They're plentiful. Please don't listen to people who don't believe in science. Yes, Gila.
As long as we're giving out PSAs about vaccines, I learned something very important this year, which is that if you are a person who weighs over 200 pounds, it is the recommendation of the Centers for Disease Control that you get vaccinated with longer needles so that the drugs have a better chance of getting where they're going.
Wow. We did that. I've never heard that before.
I hadn't either. but I found that out this year. It's extremely helpful. And for what it's worth, having been vaccinated with the longer needle this year, I didn't get a bump.
Really? Okay. All right. Wow. But it hurt. So, it hurt pretty good, I would imagine.
I will mention that it really, the vaccines, we got two last Thursday night and kind of kicked my tail. I ran a spike to fever on Friday, and I don't know if it was because of the flu shot or the COVID shot, but feeling pretty crummy for about 24 hours, but looking forward to a smooth sailing flu season this year.
Right. Well, the important thing is, if anything happens to us in the future, the naysayers will blame it on the vaccine, because you know, you're supposed to be immortal if you don't get the vaccine. It's really silly. And folks, you know, we don't work for the government, you know, just because we happen to be saying the same thing as far as, yes, yeah, science gets it right, doesn't mean that we're in anybody's pocket. We think for ourselves, and we encourage you to do the same. But please, please base it on facts and reality. And not just people who keep spouting, I did my own research and reached the conclusion that I had when I started. That really doesn't accomplish anything. And, you know, it's been a rough last couple of weeks, as we all know. And never before has it been more important to check your sources and to know when you're being lied to, or when somebody does not have all the information and perhaps might be jumping the gun about certain things. And also, you know, it's important not to close your eyes to what's happening right in front of them, because a lot of bad things are happening out there right now. We may feel powerless that we can't do anything about it, but just talking about it helps, and being aware also helps. And, you know, I guess this leads me into something that's a little bit uncomfortable. And Rob, I'm going to talk to you about this, because you're more or less, in this room, or this virtual room, the expert when it comes to Mastodon. And as you may know, I had a bit of a run-in on Mastodon, which I'm still trying to figure out. And let me start at the outset by saying, I don't mean to cause problems. I just seem to be caused when I'm around. So I'm still learning about this. I don't want to upset anybody, but sometimes people are going to get upset regardless. So you've seen my Twitter feed. You've seen what I say on Twitter. You've seen the kinds of things I talk about. Sometimes I talk about what's going on in the news. Sometimes I talk about the world. Sometimes I use words that you can't say over the radio. And, you know, you can take it or leave it. I'm not asking you to believe what I say. I'm not asking you to like what I say. But I do believe I have the right to say what I say. Well, apparently that's not quite how it works on Mastodon. I'm on this this instance. An instance being just one server, is that the right word? Where people run it on their own. And apparently everybody has different rules. And I really wasn't aware that everybody had such radically different rules. This is what I said, okay? And, you know, it's harsh, but I was upset when I said it. I said, Israel is reported to have killed over 1,000 children since last week. If you can somehow justify this as necessary or unavoidable, you're no better than Hamas. That's what I said. You know, people react. But the reaction I got on my Mastodon instance was to get a strike against my account, to be warned, to be told that that's inappropriate to say. The exact phrase I got was, please either use content warnings for posts like this, or post them as any other visibility, such as unlisted, followers only, etc. This is a rule that, first of all, I didn't even know about. I guess I didn't study all the rules that come with this instance. But it really rubbed me the wrong way, because, first of all, I'm reporting a fact. You know, I'm reporting something that is on every news channel, and I'm simply expressing an opinion. What is objectionable about this? And I got to say, the responses that I got on Mastodon were much nastier than responses I get on Twitter. Basically, just people talking down and saying that you should know better than to say this. It could really bother somebody. Yeah, it could really bother somebody. But do I have to watch everything I say from now on because somebody might be upset by something I say? I think we should be upset at what I said. The facts contained in what I said, and let's focus on that. We seem to have waltzed right over the fact that 1,000 kids were killed. And it's something that we just don't seem to really care about. And if you talk about it, you're the problem. That's wrong. I'm sorry. That just rubs me the wrong way. And I don't know how to handle it. I really don't know what to do here. I have a feeling I'm not going to be on this instance any much longer. It happens to be in Germany. In fact, it happens to be run by Chaos, CCC, which you'd think, hackers would have thicker skin as far as this kind of thing goes. But I don't know. It might be a cultural thing. It might be in Germany, speech is treated different. In fact, I know speech is treated differently in Germany than here. I'm not exactly sure how I wound up on a German Mastodon instance. But I noticed in the rules, there's a bunch of rules. Some of them, make quite a bit of sense, like no harassment and stalking and things like that. No Nazi content. That's nice. How about this? When posting to the local timeline, which I'll get into in a second, provide content warnings for violence, sexually explicit content, death/disease, and politics, particularly when negative or controversial. So I'm expected to label my own posts. I'm not exactly sure how this works because they say it could be something like USPOL, or elections. I don't know how it actually works, if that somehow gets filtered somewhere. I mean, if I pick USPOL and somebody else picks U.S.POL, someone else says United States politics, is that all the same thing? Who is actually figuring out what these content warnings actually mean? I've never had to do this before on, horrible sites like Facebook and Twitter. I've never had to police my own words. And that's really something that, I kind of thought Mastodon was going to be better. I thought Mastodon was going to be, I'm not one of these free speech absolutist idiots that believe you should be able to say anything hurtful and racist and sexist and all that. No, not at all. This is a conversation. It's a conversation amongst adults. And I'm sorry if it upsets people. I'm sorry if, facts of what's going on in the world or opinions rub people the wrong way. But, things rub me the wrong way, too. I mean, I swear to God, if I see another post about Taylor Swift, I am going to start breaking things that I own that I value. And I mean it this time because I cannot take any more of that. I cannot. My God. Everywhere you look, just Taylor Swift. But regardless, that rubs me the wrong way. But nobody, I don't expect others to tiptoe around my sensibilities. I don't know. I'm sorry, Rob. I was asking for your advice on this, and I haven't let you get a word in edgewise, but that was therapeutic for me.
No, I'm glad because it really did seem to be having a therapeutic effect.
Another tissue.
But what you are coming up against, I'm terribly sorry, what you are coming up against is something that a lot of people new to Mastodon have found themselves butting up against in a wrong way. And it's actually something that has been noted as one of the more difficult facets of Mastodon, Mastodon's culture and how the app itself works for people coming from other social media to come to terms with. And that is content warnings. Now, there is a function when you write a post to put in a content warning, and that content warning can just be a short string of text, which is effectively a subject line. And it results in, if you put something in there like U.S. politics or sexually explicit post or violence or, Star Trek spoilers or what have you, anything that you think somebody on the other end might want to scroll past instead of seeing, your post to Mastodon comes up as just that line. And those interested can click on it and see the entire post. Those not interested can just scroll past. And that is a deliberate function of how Mastodon works. Now, what you came up against is, I think, not to do with what you were actually expressing about what's going on right now in the world. It's to do with the fact that political content, especially extremely emotional political content, such as anything about the war that's going on now, is high stress material to some people. It's material that some people want the ability to not have in their feed, but still follow you. And so what the content warning does is it is not policing what you're saying. It is providing a category to what you're saying. It is categorizing what you're saying and allowing people to decide for themselves whether or not they want to click past that and see the post or just move on with their day.
I think in a way you could also say that a content warning, first of all, there is a setting that you can apply that will allow you to expand anything with a content warning. So if you personally don't feel you need content warnings, you can disable them globally on your own account. Mm-hmm. But I think of content warnings as like deodorant and hygiene, because you can say, this is the way that my body smells. And if that offends you, I'm sorry. But we can also take steps to mitigate the fact that, you know, people's armpits and butts smell, and you don't have to waft that at the people around you unless they're really into that and they want to walk up to you and sniff your armpit. That's fine. But like, content warnings are like hygiene, because I will say that right now I very much appreciate them, because if I want to see like cooking videos and I do not want an absolute fire hose of people who have been killed and maimed and kidnapped, I need a place where I can do that, because in my social media world, that's all anybody's talking about. Mm-hmm. And if there's a time and a place where I can say, I need a minute, yeah, I need a minute.
Okay, but, you know, I just feel like I'm being called upon to do this extra work to label what I am saying. And that's really difficult to do. How do I even label what I said? What is that? It's a, you know, it's a headline. It's something that happened. It's horrible. You know, the word I use to describe it, child massacre, might also be upsetting to somebody, because I don't know of any other way to describe that. I really don't. It's not, you know, bad news. It's not, you know, whatever I say, it's not going to do it justice. And plus, the time I have to spend thinking about, okay, what did I just say and what does it mean and how's it going to affect other people? And, you know, I long for the simple days where I said something. And then if I say something stupid, someone tells me I said something stupid. But I don't get demerits for basically saying something that somebody might find offensive. I don't know. It's just, I'm having a difficult time with this.
But it's also important to know, though, that you are not the only person having a difficult time with this. A lot of people in our fields, as well as people in general, during the great migrations away from Twitter and Instagram and things like that to Mastodon, a lot of people have found themselves coming up against that and not fully understanding it, not understanding the rules and how they are presented, and not understanding the cultural norms of Mastodon, which for many people, like many people, put content warnings on things that are completely just benign to perhaps the vast majority of us. There are people who post content warnings, who will post content warnings for food and anything involving food or pictures of food, because that might be upsetting to people with certain eating disorders. There are people who post content warnings about a photo with eye contact to the screen, because people certain types of, I believe, autistic spectrum related things that they live with, could be upset by pictures of eye contact. And one way to look at that is, well, everyone's so thin-skinned, everyone's so oversensitive. But I think that also is related to the fact that they were called content warnings. If this functionality were in the software, but it was just called subject line, which is what it functionally is, then that might not put people off so much. It might also ease people in understanding how this whole mess works. And it is a pain point that is being raised all over the place in the Mastodon community, on the Mastodon project on GitHub, and further. And there are big discussions around how can we make this whole thing more understandable, more welcoming to new users, and more of a thing that makes sense to folks coming in, rather than what it is now, which is kind of something that grew organically from a small community of users in the beginning that has spread into basically a cultural norm on the service. So yes, it is a pain point. Yes, it seems silly, weird, or any number of other things to people coming in. But also from the receiving end, it can be a very useful thing. And it is a thing that a lot of my Mastodon instances get strict about in the rules.
Well, again, you know, I'm new to this. There's a lot. I don't really get, for instance, the whole local feed thing. Apparently, when you post things, it's visible on the local feed. And suggestions were that you disable that, or you just send to your followers, or you make your posts unlisted. And you know, these may quote unquote solve the problem, but it seems to me that I am making my speech less than the speech of other people. And why should I be doing that when I think what I'm saying is perfectly valid in a conversation? And, you know, I don't want to always have to be asterisking what I'm saying or defining what I'm saying. It really, imagine every sentence that you say, because what you're posting basically is a sentence. You have to fill out a form. You have to say, what is this? What does it mean? Who could it offend? Et cetera. You know, I guess for people who have been using Mastodon a while, this might seem unreasonable, but for somebody who is used to just being able to say what they, you know, what's on their mind, I don't know. It seems overly difficult.
If the benefit to the few that are suffering from those conditions and need this desperately is, I mean, in some cases, yes, it's completely warranted and needed. But it seems like keywords are also being lumped into this, so that any discussion that trips it up sets it to trigger. Uh-huh. And basically you then get in this scenario where, as you said, you have to choose through things. Well, what if everything you said was a content warning, kind of like Rob was alluding to, that, you know, people almost use it in a jokey way or just for all kinds of unusual scenarios. Mm-hmm. To describe and contextualize what they're posting.
Well, I mean, we're talking on the radio. So what if a sentence that you say, Kyle, is upsetting to somebody, but you didn't warn them before you said the sentence? Now, you just said the sentence without thinking, because it's part of expression.
It takes the spontaneity. Exactly. It takes the spontaneity out of it. But also a lot of, and let's just say it's something that's controversial, but it's not necessarily hate speech or something incredibly, like making a personal threat to somebody.
Hate speech is
illegal.
That's easy. That's easy to figure out.
Part of getting people's attention or saying something that might be edgy or unpopular in a particular moment, mm-hmm. at all. Part of that is getting people's attention who wouldn't ordinarily respond to that. So if you basically put a warning on everything or have to basically obfuscate it, you're benefiting a couple people that might react to those words, but in an extreme case. But if it's not that extreme, you're kind of cutting people off to being able to make up their own mind, and to the people that might say, okay, they're all in on this, like this is just how it is. Mm-hmm. They benefit as far as just their own ignorance or that they're living in that bliss and you're feeling stifled and as though you've got all this additional work to do to qualify. What in the very guidelines you read include politics, which in internet culture and just in speech in general is the point of the public square. Mm-hmm. So they're losing me a little bit in this.
I don't think the number really is the issue, whether it's 2 people or 2 million people that could be affected by this. It's important either way. But I'm just debating whether this is the right way to handle it. Would it not be a better solution to have some kind of filter that looks for a speech that could be a problem to somebody who inputs their options, their choices? That way, you know, I think it would do a better job, because, you know, I might put a content warning label on something, but a different content warning might also apply for somebody else. So do I put 2 content warnings for different things? And, you know, where does it end? It just, it seems like you're doing a lot of policing of your own speech. And I do think that would keep you from speaking quite a bit. Alex, go ahead.
Well, first, I, I totally disagree with the statement that you made on Mastodon. Maybe we can debate that at some point later tonight or on overtime or something. But putting that aside.
Who, me or Mastodon?
Your statement on Mastodon. Just okay. For the record, I disagree with what you said. But I agree with you with respect to you should not have the need to start labeling and self-censoring.
Wait, hang on, Alex. What is it? I said a lot of things. What is it you disagree with that I said about Mastodon?
No, not about Mastodon, but on Mastodon, about the moral equivalency between Hamas and Israeli and the massacre of children. That's what I disagree with. I don't think there is a moral equivalency.
Okay, well, you know, we're not going to get into that now. Yeah, all I said was,
we don't need to get into that now, but we can talk about that some other time later. But what I totally disagree with is this need to regulate your own content on a social media platform. Like that I agree with you entirely about, but I don't use Mastodon, and so my lack of erudition on this subject may make my response seem silly or curt here. But to me, it seems like this notion of labeling your own content is this really an unnecessary form of self-censorship that at heart, at least to me, seems more like the latest version of virtual signaling and holier-than-thou nonsense. That is the reason why I think social media in general is a useless cesspit of noise with little to no redeeming signal. And I mean, where does this end, though? I mean, if we take this kind of to the reductio ad absurdum approach, Rob, you had mentioned people labeling posts with food in them or something because it might trigger somebody with an eating disorder. Well, by that same token, we should have content warnings on every single magazine and every single book in case there's a picture of food on it. All this seems totally ridiculous to me, unworkable, and just silly.
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, As I was describing this, I think it's still like you guys are getting the message that this is about editing yourself. It's about regulating your speech. It's about putting in extra work. But I ask you to imagine your email inbox. We've all been using those for decades. We know how they work. We're comfortable with them. Imagine your email inbox if instead of a row of subject lines, it had the full text of every single email. That would be a mess. That would be terrible to navigate through. And also, you wouldn't be able to easily find whichever one thing it was that you were looking for in your archive or, you know, whichever thing you were interested in going back and clicking on and reading.
Yeah, but by design, these are short texts that you're supposed to read. There are no subjects on short text usually.
Sometimes, but on some instances, you can actually write full-length blog posts. You can write ridiculously long things. Every instance has their own idea of what the text limit is, but that's another thing. This is about being welcoming to as many people as possible, and to that end, it is about accommodating as many people as possible. There are things that I post because I use Mastodon is basically my daily driver, and because I'm involved in many things, things like this program, things like hacker stuff, but also my artwork, my comedy, my, you know, just other randomness. And as social media, as you described, Alex, has become such a fire hose of nonsense and noise, I find the content warning system actually serves to mitigate that. It lets you modulate the noise. It lets you tweak it to have an experience that's I'm reading the things from this person that I want to read. They're writing about other stuff I'm not interested in, and I don't have to read those. So it's actually, I think, working on the problem that you're talking about. And I think it does it in a way that, you know, as everything else in Mastodon has been sort of hacked together on the fly by people who are basically like fixing the car while it's driving down the highway at 80 miles an hour. And it's really interesting to see how this is all coming up. And I think that is definitely evocative of the hacker spirit behind the Mastodon project and behind a great amount of the community that are running the thing.
But you see, what you're arguing there is content warning as a way to make things more efficient, not content warning as a penalty. And that's what I was faced with. My speech was wrong, and it needs a content warning to prevent people from reading it. That's basically the message that I got. And I got a strike. I've never gotten a strike on any of my social media accounts before. Here I'm using this. I actually started using it as much as I was using Twitter for like 2 days, and I got a strike almost immediately. So that does not bode well in my view. Go ahead, Gila.
So I think part of the the key issue here is the decentralized nature of Mastodon, and that every instance has its own rules and guidelines, and you need to make sure you know what the rules and guidelines of the instance you're signing up with happen to be. But with that said, I would like to reiterate what I said earlier about deodorant, and let me explain what I mean. Because I don't see the content warning system as policing what I'm saying. I see it as being a good neighbor. I don't run up and down the street yelling whatever I'm yelling at the top of my lungs. And in the same way, using the content warning system, I think, enables people to kind of opt in. It's putting an opt-in model on it. People have already opted in a way in that they're following me or we're on the same instance. But maybe, you know, if I'm talking about college football, they're not as interested in hearing it as they would be if I'm talking about this radio show or karaoke or 80s movies or whatever it is I happen to be talking about. And I think that using the content warning system is less about self-policing and more about being a responsible member of the community in which you find yourself, not unlike putting deodorant on before you leave the house.
I do like the deodorant comparison, but I must say that if you had to put deodorant on every time you said a sentence, it would get to be a pain in the ass. That's my belief. Okay, enough about Mastodon. Let's talk about Blue Sky. Who's on Blue Sky? Blue Sky is hard because you need an invitation to get onto Blue Sky. Once you get an invitation, you get an invitation code in 2 weeks, and you can invite somebody else. And yeah, I guess that's sort of how they're spreading. It's interesting. It's very similar to Twitter in look, and the operation is a little bit different. Any of you guys using Blue Sky at all or familiar with it? They can't hear you shake your head. Okay. I mean, they can't see you shake your head. I've been experimenting with it over the past few weeks or so. Big problem with Blue Sky that I can see is responsiveness, because there are a bunch of problems that need fixing, and there's nobody there to actually fix them. Or at least if they do fix them, it takes quite a while, and they don't tell you that they fixed it. For instance, and this is really cool, by the way, if you have a domain, and we have 2600.com, you can use that domain as your username. And that's a cool username to have, and no one else can do that. You have to put something on the site that that Blue Sky will look at and confirm that it's there, and then you get that particular username. However, when you do this, your profile disappears for about 10 or 15 minutes. No explanation. and of course you're panicking that you've deleted your account or that you've made it inaccessible. And when we, finally got 2600.com, configured, then it showed up as invalid, username. And we had no idea what that was all about. So we were writing all these, trouble forms, not getting any response. And then a day later, it just started working, and we had no idea why. So things like that, I think, are an issue. But actually, one of the biggest problems that we've noticed is impersonation. There doesn't seem to be a method of keeping people from saying that they're you or they're your organization. And we have a big problem with that with 2600, where how do we prove? I mean, having the 2600.com username is a good way to prove that. But if there are other users claiming that they're the same entity that you are, yeah, that's an issue. And if they're not taking it seriously, I don't know if there's much of a future.
There's no amount of branding we can do to differentiate from that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean,
it's unfair.
Goodbye, blue sky. No, that's not funny. Premature. I mean, they're new. Okay, enough of that. Yeah, but you know, I recommend it. I do recommend trying it. It's easy to use. It's one of several different options out there. I don't know. You know, it's never easy to figure out how to communicate. It used to be easier when everybody had AIM, when everybody was able to send a message to somebody, when Twitter was able to feed to Facebook. It just seemed like you could talk to a lot of people and they could talk to you. And now people are on their own platforms and they expect you to be as well. If you want to talk to somebody on LinkedIn, you've got to get a LinkedIn account and you have to, you know, communicate with them that way. And now people are shying away from email, and that's a problem because there are very few ways to actually agree on a communication standard.
I think we're at a huge fragmentation point in a lot of the different services, and a lot of the users have a sort of they're a little bit sort of disassociated or maybe up for grabs, and there's a lot of vying for that loyalty and getting new users and getting people to try different things. And it is, I think, they're giving a sense of an unsettling sense of sort of upheaval. Uh-huh. Nobody's connected. Nobody's, and there's plenty of actors taking advantage of all of that chaos.
You see this story in The Verge about Mayor Eric Adams in New York City. Thanks to artificial intelligence tools, New York City Mayor Eric Adams has sent a barrage of robocalls to residents in languages he doesn't speak. That includes thousands of robocalls in Spanish, more than 250 in Yiddish, more than 160 in Mandarin, 57 in Klingon, 89 in Cantonese, and 23 in Haitian Creole. Why not Klingon, though? I mean, you could do it. That's triggered pushback over how ethical it is for Adams to portray himself to potential voters as someone who speaks their native language when he actually doesn't. Doesn't speak Spanish. I'm surprised. Let's hear what he sounds like.
Hola, soy el alcalde Eric Adams. Queremos invitarlo a venir a trabajar con la ciudad de Nueva York y ayudar a hacer que esta gran ciudad sea un mejor. Estamos felices de llevar nuestra próxima sesión informativa de empleo a su comunidad, en la cual las agencias municipales seleccionaran y contrataran a personas como usted. Obtenga una buena remuneración, excelentes beneficios y la oportunidad de mantener esta ciudad en funcionamiento. Espero verlo ahí.
Wow. Does that sound like Eric Adams? People seem to think it does.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think it does.
Well, okay, so Albert Foxconn, executive director of the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project, which spells STOP, said this is deeply unethical, especially on the taxpayer's dime. Using AI to convince New Yorkers that he speaks languages that he doesn't is deeply Orwellian. You know, I think there are a lot of things that you could call Eric Adams unethical about. I'm not sure this is one of them. You know, this is... It's kind of cool. I mean, you can use artificial intelligence to speak a foreign language to people so they understand what you're saying, and it sounds like you. Maybe preface it by saying, this is artificial intelligence, not really me. I don't know. But I don't really have a problem with this. What do you think, Alex?
I again disagree with you, though. I do think there's an ethics issue here with this, but in particular, because there's no preface, I think it's disingenuous of him to make a call to a potential voter, let's say in Mandarin, in his voice, and allow that voter to think that he speaks that language.
How do you know it's him? How do you know he did it?
What do you mean?
Well, it's official, I guess, but anybody could do this.
Well, anybody could do this, sure. But I mean, it obviously benefits him. And we have to, I think, assume for the moment that he has authorized it. He's spoken about it. He was quite proud of it, I think, at the press conference. But my main issue here is, though, that it's misleading to voters without having some kind of preface that says that this was created or generated using artificial intelligence. Mr. Adams doesn't speak Mandarin, but this message is in Mandarin, or this message was generated using artificial intelligence, you know, to in Mandarin, something
but,
like that.
Do you think he gets more voter approval if they hear him speaking their language? You think it's...
Absolutely, absolutely. Right. It's definitely a way to connect. But what I disagree with Mr. Khan is I don't see how this is Orwellian in a lot of ways. I think it's unethical. I think he's right about it. It shouldn't be happening on a taxpayer's dime as well. I'd like to know I'd like to see some kind of accounting about how much money was spent on this type of thing. But I don't think it's Orwellian necessarily. That's different to me.
All right. Well, you know, we should get used to this because I think more things like this are going to be happening. Go ahead, Gila.
I think I don't know if I would say Orwellian necessarily. I do think it is pandering in the ugliest possible way. And also, I'm sorry, Eric Adams learned how to speak six languages. The man doesn't know his robot cops don't have hands. I'm still not quite over that, by the way. And but no, this idea that he speaks your language and he's going to be calling you and speaking in this language. People made fun of Michael Bloomberg for making announcements in Spanish. But we saw Michael Bloomberg reading the Spanish off the paper. God love him. The man was trying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're missing here.
But hold on a second. Hold on a second. Was the man speaking Spanish, or was it just reading it off a piece of paper and doing the best he can without understanding what he was talking about? How is that different? How is that different?
It's completely different because he's making an effort. He's not saying, I'm going to farm this out to somebody that I'm no part of. I'm going to make an effort to see you. If you see the mayor, and yes, there was a Twitter account called El Bloombito that made fun of this phenomenon, and it was amazing. But for people to see, the mayor is making an effort to communicate with me in a way that I can understand. And he didn't do it in Mandarin because that was probably way beyond his ken. That's not written in English letters. But again, he was trying. And Eric Adams is just like, I'm going to put forth the least amount of effort I possibly can to attempt to reap the greatest efforts. Like I said, pandering on a colossal scale, and it worries me where this can go from here.
First of all, when did pandering become something new for politicians? They constantly are doing that. But I think
paying for it.
I think what's happening here is not so much Eric Adams did something that Michael Bloomberg wouldn't. It's the technology has changed and made it so much easier. I think Michael Bloomberg would be shoving Adams aside to do this first. So I think this is something that you'll see from a lot of politicians and probably a lot of other people as well.
The thing that struck me was that a lot of mailers and campaign materials that are printed that politicians use to speak directly to the voters are translated as, and I mean that's not deceiving people in exactly the same way that we're suggesting with someone speaking it to you, but I think he is being kind of open about the technology and basically saying, yo, it's 2023, yeah. The reading of the paper, that's how we did it back then, but mm-hmm. I'm skipping all that, and now I can speak six languages. It's like Eric Adams just hopped out the Matrix, and he's like, yeah, I want to get reelected, or whatever. He's playing with it, and I think some kind of warning, like was suggested, might be appropriate, but especially if it's deployed, like, on robocalls. Yeah,
I don't
and
think
stuff,
that's unreasonable to mass, say that, like, this is an AI generated call, but
a phone calls.
I just think people are more comfortable if they hear somebody speaking in their language. I don't know what the alternative is to have somebody who's not Eric Adams speaking for him, and it just puts people at a disadvantage to not feel that connection.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the content maybe would be less obnoxious, like if there are videos and things that are being translated and getting his message out to people that do not necessarily speak English as a first language, then it's something that a lot of politicians are going to try to take advantage
of. Does anybody have any idea what he was saying? I don't think any of us speak Spanish, so
no, I don't
know. No idea what he's talking about. Gila?
He was talking about a job fair. He said, if you come and work for the city, you'll get good benefits and decent money. And he was basically inviting people to a hiring fair.
Wow. Okay. All right. Rob?
The thing about this is it's a marketing tool, and it's a brilliant marketing tool because, as you said, it is very comforting for people to hear something said to them in their own language. And for people who immigrated to this country, English isn't their first language. Yes, that can be awesome to get the feeling that the mayor speaks my language. That means the mayor has some familiarity, at least, or understanding of my culture, my community, and might understand my needs more fully. And so using this robocall tool like this is a brilliant marketing move. And like most brilliant marketing moves, it's pretty evil because it's just deceptive. It's tripping that switch in your head. It's tripping that comfort switch without any substance behind it. At least Bloomberg, he could have been said to, like, surely he had somebody coaching him on the pronunciations and stuff on that paper, which meant, okay, he's got a Spanish-speaking friend. Maybe there's some chance that, this Spanish-speaking person who's close to the mayor can mention something if something goes south or something is needed by my community. But this is just it being fed into, Google Translate or something. Mm-hmm. And it has no soul. It has no actual intention behind it. It is just empty advertising. And I think it's deceptive.
But you know, what's funny is that we're all skipping over the robocall part of this and not objecting to that. I mean, it used to be that people said, you know, he's not making a real phone call. That's a recording. You might think it's a real person, but it's not. That's deceptive. But now we accept that. That's okay. It's just that he's speaking a language he doesn't actually speak. And again, I believe Bloomberg would be doing that in a second if he had the opportunity, if he was still, liked anything.
I just wanted to add, I would take issue, Alex. I don't think it costs very much. I mean, the whole point of a lot of this stuff is it's pretty good now, and it might be like equivalent to a couple watts, you know, just to process one language, or, you know, once you have an imprint of a voice print of him.
Uh-huh. We could do off the hook in Mandarin for that Mandarin station in New York, and that would be amazing.
I'm as curious, though, to Alex's point, what really practically does it cost to do this? I would say cheap.
I'm curious. I'm fascinated by the technology. I also want to know how accurate it is. So it's interesting. Hey, we have a letter that I'd like to get to, and you can write letters too. OTH@2600.com. I'm sure tonight's show will generate many letters. And feel free to express yourself. No content warning needed. Just let loose and be merciless. Hi to everyone from at 2600, from a longtime listener and admirer. I live on the East Coast. Whenever I'm in New York City, I always listen to WBAI, Off the Hook, and your other show on WUSB. Are favorites of mine, and I really appreciate all the work you put into making them in what is clearly a passion-driven endeavor, or one might say obsession, and regardless, psychological terms aren't important right now. Most of the time, I listen to stream shows from your website, since I have an unusual schedule, and I love how well-designed, effective, and simple your site is. It reminds me of the early days of the internet, which I think you'd agree were great. And, you know, I like this, because when people usually say how simple our site is, it's an insult. But this is a compliment, and that's how I feel about it, too, because you don't need a lot of bells and whistles to run a website. And all we're doing is putting our shows up on the website and making it fairly simple and functional. I have some questions, which maybe you can answer if you'd like to. What is the story with the Off the Hook theme music? Who is it performed by? Well, actually, I can tell you that. It's performed by Big Audio Dynamite. Unlike most Big Audio Dynamite songs, though, it's not sung by Mick Jones. It's sung by Don Letts. And that song, for some reason, the listener goes on to say, honestly, I don't really even like it that much, but it's the harbinger of an hour. And these days, 2 hours of good talk radio, so how can I really complain? It just kind of fit. It just kind of fit the off-the-hook tone, and it just became something that was affiliated with Off the Hook. And interesting, we'll be playing another piece by Don Letts' new solo album, which just came out. We'll do that as our outro in 3 minutes. The listener also says, I also love the most recent Off the Wall music created by Baltimore native Philip Glass. I did not know Philip Glass was from Baltimore. You might also find this weird anecdote from my past interesting. When I was 13 or 14 years old, I was very interested in phones. I would maintain lists of payphone numbers. Sounds familiar. And my favorite part of the local suburban Kansas library was the room full of phone books from all over the world. There was a company called the Musical Heritage Society at the time in the early 80s, which had a subscription service which sent out cassette tape recordings of classical music. I'd recently gotten a tape of Ralph Vaughan Williams' Fifth Symphony, which I really liked, and being the impetuous teenager I was, I decided to call him and tell him how much I liked it. I thought, through various means, I called the listing of Mrs. Ralph Vaughan Williams in the London phone book, and she answered. And I said something to the effect of, wow, your husband's music is so awesome. May I talk to him? And she answered in a very British way that she really appreciated that I liked his music. And sorry, he's been dead since the late 50s. And would that be all, because it's really late and I'd like to go to bed? this week, I'm playing that piece in concerts, finally, as a professional. And it has been interesting to think about. Signed, David. David, what a great letter. What a great letter that just sort of brings it all home. And makes us realize that you never know who's out there, what they're interested in, what they're being inspired by, and the similar paths that you might be going down. So thank you so much for writing. And again, others who wish to write to us, OTH@2600.com.
so many talented listeners out there.
There really
we
are.
We love hearing your stories and your responses to what we're talking about.
Now, we are going to be continuing our conversation, or perhaps starting a brand new conversation over on Off the Hook Overtime over on YouTube. You can get the YouTube link on the 2600.com webpage. Just click on the little box up on the top of the page, or just go to channel 2600 on YouTube and join us there. You can call in. You can be part of the chat, which is running this week, and that's always a lot of fun. But as promised, we're going to go out with a piece from that new Don Lutz album, who sings the intro to the Off the Hook theme. That's a song called Much Worse, came out back in the 80s. But this just came out a couple of weeks ago from the Out of Sync CD. And this is called Wrong. See you next week.
Come along and help me sing this song. This is Ralph Pointer. Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future? Can we talk? Call in 212-209-2877. Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.